What's up? Welcome to the OK Beats podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adioye. Joining me this week, we have Barrett Courtney. What's up, Barrett?
Not much, man. How are you doing today?
Dude, I'm doing well. Did I say your name correctly? I ask that every time, but I just gotta make sure.
Yeah, Barrett Courtney. Yeah.
Barrett Courtney.
Yeah, I have a very weird first name. It's typically like a last name. A lot of people get confused whenever they see my name like printed. They're like, oh, I think the Courtney is supposed to be the first name and the Barrett's supposed to be the last name.
Yeah.
And then they'll say my name out loud. Courtney? Is there a Courtney here? No, it's right on the paper. My first name's Barrett. You nailed it.
That's all good. I have sort of a similar situation going on where like, I'll email people at work, and I'll get emails back referring to me as, like, a lady because, like, people assume that, like, Blessing is a lady's name. And then, like...
Blessing is such a cool name.
Thanks,
like,
man.
Let me just say, like, it's so cool. When I saw you on Twitter at one point, you're tweeting at fucking Alex O'Neill or it's someone stupid like that. Mm. And I saw your name, Blessing. I was like, oh, that's a really awesome name. And then... you also stand out because you have that really cool Twitter picture of like you as a
baby, yeah,
child, yeah, as a little baby doing like sort of like the hang 10 sort of thing.
Yeah. Nice, man. Thanks, man. So I'm having you on this podcast on this episode because this is a very special episode. Usually we have like numbered episodes, and this is going to be a numbered episode, but I don't know which number this is going to be yet. It might be 29, it might be 30, it might be 28.
Okay.
The reason why we're doing this episode is because you're big into DK64. Like, you love Donkey Kong 64.
I love Donkey Kong 64 to a ridiculous extent, to the point where like everybody I've ever been on a show with or anything just know that I love that game way too fucking much. So it's almost a joke of like how much I hold up the quality of Donkey Kong 64.
Nice.
Yeah. Awesome. I love that game. It's one of the first games I remember playing, actually. I remember getting it for Christmas one year. I think it had been 1998 or 99. And I got the special edition Nintendo 64 that came with Donkey Kong 64, where mm-hmm. the Nintendo itself was like a see-through green, and then it came with DK64. And there's a picture of me like holding it up above my head, like, yeah! I was super excited. Even though I'd never really played a Donkey Kong game before. So yeah, that was like one of my earliest memories, was like getting that and playing that a lot with my dad. So
I want to get into, I want to get into that. And we're going to put a bookmark right there because I want to start off from right there. But right beforehand, where might people know you from? Or if people don't know you, where should they find you? And where can they get to know you?
So you might have originally known me from, I used to run my own YouTube channel called BZG, where I used to host a show called Talking Shit. And also on that channel, I started a show called The B-List, which is sort of an analytics show going into sort of not great, not terrible pieces of media that just sort of get forgotten about, or people sort of shrug it off as just okay. And I go into it and I say, hey, let's look at like what makes these things good. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I got hired at IGN back in October. And in the last couple months, I'm a gameplay editor at IGN. So I play all the games and I make cool clips of them. So if you've ever seen, I think one of my most successful videos that isn't like a graphics comparison or anything was I did two montages for Final Fantasy 15. One with like all of the special attacks that you can do in Final Fantasy 15, and then like one where you can showing off like all the cool car customizations for the Regalia. So if you have seen either of those videos or anything similar, that's sort of like what I do at IGN. And then recently, I have started a new YouTube channel with my good friend Sean Pitts called Zero Life. We host a weekly podcast sort of in the same vein as this show, where it's just nerdy stuff that we really love. Just actually recorded our fourth episode earlier today. And so it's a new child, and I really like it. So if you want to go check that out, that's what I'm doing on camera, at least. And then the show that I talked about earlier, The B-List, I'm bringing that show back onto this new channel. So if you liked The B-List at all, look for it in the next coming months on this new channel, Zero Life.
Nice. I saw the Dark Knight episode of B-List very good. Like, your video editing is probably, like, better than 99% of people, at least YouTubers I've seen. Like,
thank you.
That... the way you stream together stuff, like, visually is actually very... I haven't seen anything like it. It's very unique in the way you do it. Like, I'm sure you got inspiration from somewhere, but it's very much like clip after clip after clip clip of, like, I don't know. It's strung together very well. Do you have, like, a somebody who you look to kind of get that from, or is that something you kind of, like, developed yourself? Or,
well, first of all, thank you. That means a lot to me. I do all the things when it comes to YouTubing, right? I'm on camera, I write scripts and all that, but the thing that I really pride myself on is my video editing. So thank you so much for that compliment. And the B-list was actually inspired by a way better YouTube series called Movies with Mikey. It's Mikey Newman, who is actually, he works at Gearbox Studios. He was, like, one of the lead writers of, I don't know if he was a lead writer, but he helped write, like, Borderlands 2, and then he also worked on, oh no, what was that game that came out around the same time as Overwatch?
And Battleborn?
Overwatch. Yeah, he also worked on Battleborn. And so Movies with Mikey is sort of like the same vein of the B-list, where he just sort of goes into any movie that he really wants to and just talks about, like, what's cool about the movie, like, what's different about the movie. And it was actually because of my friend Sean that I found that show. He moved out here to San Francisco. He's like, hey, I've just recently found this cool YouTube channel that you should check out. And he's got a couple episodes. Like, he has one on The Force Awakens that is very emotional. He has one on The Iron Giant. He has one on Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. And so I saw that series, and I was like, fuck, I really want to do that. So that's why I started that, the B-list. And I don't know if my editing style is like from his editing style in Movies with Mikey. I would have to, like, sort of look at both of them, like, one after the other, and see if I actually pulled inspiration from how he edits. But yeah, I've been editing probably since 2013, and, like, senior year of high school, I edited a sort of really bad, like, hour-long, like, student movie that was whatever, and then, like, I taught myself how to edit there, and so I've been slowly, like, teaching myself how to edit for, at this point, 4 years, when it comes to, like, movies. And then I hosted, like, a sort of skit comedy YouTube channel a couple years back, and taught myself how to, like, edit for comedy, and then doing, like, the podcast thing, where it's simple, like, all right, make an intro, and then let the podcast roll, and then make the outro, and that's it. And then, going into the B-list, it was sort of, like, pulling from, like, how I learned how to edit for comedy, because even though, like, the B-list is very, like, oh, let's think about these things and let's get analytical and philosophical and all this stuff, there is a lot of, like, jokes that I sprinkle in throughout my script. So I like to sort of edit hard cuts and whatnot, because that's just what I pulled from a couple years ago. So yeah, just a sort of weird culmination of different things that I've gathered the last couple years with my editing style.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for coming on. For the people listening, remember that this is the OKB's podcast. It's a gaming and nerd culture centric show where a couple of friends come together and talk about what's going on in our world. We are the official podcast of OKBs.com. If you like the show, remember to subscribe to us on your streaming service of choice. Visit OKBs.com and follow at OKBs now on Twitter. The reason why I wanted to have you on specifically is your love for Donkey Kong 64.
Yes.
This is, like, the first one of, like, these episodes I'm doing, as long as I can recall. I don't remember doing that. I think I might have done one for, like, Persona 4. I think, I think we for sure did one. But Donkey Kong 64, I think I have a similar story to you when it comes to Donkey Kong 64, because I actually I'm a huge fan of Donkey Kong 64. I consider it, like, probably in my top 10 favorite games of all time.
Mine as well.
Yeah, like, it's one of those games that a lot of people dislike it, and I understand the reasons for disliking it, because it does have its issues, but, like, I feel like it gets overlooked a lot of time for the things that it does well. And so I wanted to talk about it, because I think this might be the only chance I get to, like, actually talk to somebody else who loves Donkey Kong 64. So let's get started with, what's your immediate take on DK64? Like, what's your story with the game? You kind of started on it, but I want to hear more. Do you remember getting it? How do you feel about the game, et cetera, et cetera? What's your take?
So, So I earlier, like I told the story about it. I got it for Christmas, and I remember playing it a lot with my dad when I was really young. Mm-hmm. And him and I just sort of fell in love with the game. And this was before, like, my dad's not like a huge gamer. Like he owns like a Wii and an N64 and just plays on those still, just because he really likes Nintendo games. And I was way too young to really understand like game development and like what makes a good game and what makes a bad game. It was like, it was cool. It was Donkey Kong, and it was like in an art style, because like Donkey Kong Country is held up as like a really great like 2D platformer game. And as a kid, like, I wasn't super into it because I wasn't into the art style. And mm-hmm. I think the like 3D animated art style for DK64 was something that really appealed to me. And it makes sense because I didn't connect the two at the time, but Banjo-Kazooie I also really liked as a kid. And of course, Rare made both of those games. And so they pulled sort of like what Banjo-Kazooie was and put it into Donkey Kong 64. And so I knew Donkey Kong was like this big name in sort of the Nintendo realm. And I was like, oh man, Donkey Kong for me is cool for the first time ever. And so he also got like the really weird, like diverse levels. Like you start, like your first level is sort of in the,
I can't remember the exact name. Jungle Japes? Is that? No, that's not right.
Jungle Japes sounds... Is it? It sounds almost
that might be
right.
Donkey Kong Country.
It's all like alliteration. So yeah. The first level has something to do with jungle. So it's something else with a J, and then you go from there to the desert level, and like the desert level to sort of a similar forest level where there's like all these weird mushrooms, and you have to race not an armadillo dude, but like a beetle dude who sucks. And that I'll get to that later. But there's all like these really cool like diverse levels that I really enjoyed, and it was like a game with gameplay simple enough for me to grasp the idea of like, okay, there's a certain amount of bananas I have to collect. When I get those bananas, I can fight the boss. There's a certain amount of gold bananas I have to collect. When I get enough gold bananas, I can go to the next level. So it was like a weird combination of like, I loved the art style. The gameplay was simple enough. The way you sort of go through and level on through the game like made sense to me in a way that like Mario 64 didn't really make sense to me, where, you know, I would try to get all these stars and then eventually I'd get stuck and get frustrated because some of the levels were way too hard for me. So that was sort of like my first take on it, like in as a very young kid, and like not playing it again, geez, probably until like a couple of years ago. And then like that reminded me, like, oh fuck, I really really love this game. Now with like a more sort of with more of an age lens on like, okay, like I understand like what makes a good video game and like what's good level design and all that jazz. And a lot of people talk shit on Donkey Kong 64 because it's like Banjo-Kazooie, but there's way too many collectibles. And I never saw it that way because I played way more Donkey Kong 64 than I played Banjo-Kazooie, so the amount of collectibles in Donkey Kong 64 just sort of, it was like, all right, like, I can't compare this to anything else because I'm a young, dumb kid who, you know, hasn't played much, so it was just sort of, that's how the game was, so I never really had that, like, train of thought of, like, oh, there's too many collectibles. I was like, to me, it was just, okay, there are collectibles. Sorry, I'm trying to think of where to go from here with the sort of like what I thought of it like when I was young. I guess like the other things that appeal to me, like especially because even though like I could get like a good amount through the game, like I still would like need my dad to get through some parts. And I remember at one point, like with his help, I finally got to the final boss where you're finally fighting K. Rool in this boxing match, which I thought was hilarious at the time. And I thought it was really cool at the, like, the final boss, it finally brought together every, like, Kong character's, like, abilities and brought them all into one boss fight. Because, like, all the boss fights beforehand, is you play as one Kong with the exception of, like, the cardboard K. Rool boss fight. you fight the armadillo, you fight him as Donkey. You fight the Firefly, you play as Diddy. You fight the Jack in the Box dude, you play as Tiny. Mm-hmm. So it was like, okay, there's these tech characters and they have their special abilities. So you have to sort of figure out like which special ability works for this villain. And then finally getting to the final fight where, you know, like with DK, like he has to turn invisible, and with Diddy, he has to like fly around and shoot the lights to have him fall onto K. Rool. With Tiny, she has to get Tiny and go into K. Rool's shoe and like hit feathers at his toes, which somehow hurt him. And then Lanky, I thought was like the best part of that boss fight, because he's got the light on him, so he can't see. So he's just using noise to sort of find out like where to fight, mm-hmm. and so Lanky would bring out his
trombone,
like try to place it. You try to place a banana like in the right spot, and then play his trombone, and then K. Rool would run over to you, and hopefully he would like slip on the banana, and then it like all ended with like the big like actual boxing match with
Chunky,
thank you. And like Chunky gets really big, and you guys have like the big like boxing match, and that was really really cool. So it was like when I finally saw that final boss, and I got to like play through that as a kid, that was like the moment where I was like, I really 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 love this game. So that was sort of like my first take on it as a child, as a young kid who didn't know much about video games at the time.
Dude, like I actually never played the final boss, because as a kid, I got all the way to the final boss, or I got all the way to the end of the game. But to face the final boss, you had to like the two rareware coins, which you had to get from like you had to get from one beating the original Donkey Kong game
twice,
and I beat it the first time. I never got it the second time, and then you also had to beat like Jetpack, I think. I'm not positive. So, but I feel like you did.
So the big thing, if you don't know like that much about Donkey Kong 64, at one point, right before the final boss, you have to go into K. Rool's like special secret area, mm-hmm. and there are two coins that you have to get to unlock this door. And one's the rareware coin that you get from beating Jetpack, whatever, where you're on a you're on a spaceship, you're like on the moon, and you're trying to rebuild your spaceship. It was like an old school like Rare arcade game.
Yeah, I think it was like their first game that they made.
Yeah, and you had to like rebuild the spaceship and just try to get as many points as possible, and then you had to go to the toy factory level of Donkey Kong 64, and at one point you find the original arcade game for the original Donkey Kong game. And the first time you beat it, you just get a regular gold banana that'll help you progress to the next level, right? Mm-hmm. But then you have to beat it a second time. The second time you go through it, it's like the first original levels, but they're faster. And the level that always fucked us up, like my dad and I, was the third one, where you have the springs bouncing all the way down.
That was the worst one.
It's infuriating. Yeah. Cause once you beat that level, it's like, okay, we've got this. This last one is just taking out the pegs to make Donkey fall, and you know we're good. So, you know, you have to beat it a second time. When you beat it the second time on sort of a faster speed, then you get the rainbow banana coin or whatever, and then you can unlock this area in K. Rool's ship, and then that triggers like the final boss fight. A lot of people complain about that, like having to play the original Donkey Kong twice to get it. But it was one of those, like, as a kid, and like even as an adult, like remembering back on like playing it as a kid, I was like, this was the first time where I felt really challenged by a game and like wanted to beat it so bad. And when you finally beat it, it's like the most rewarding like experience ever. At least for me. Like, a lot of people look back at like Mega Man or like other games that are like way more popular in that sense. But for me, it was like that moment in Donkey Kong 64 where you had to beat the original Donkey Kong arcade game twice.
Yeah, dude.
And it was like one of the hardest things ever. And I recently, my girlfriend's from Hawaii, and a couple of years ago, we went to Hawaii so I could meet her family and whatnot, and her brother still had an N64, and he had Donkey Kong 64. So like night, like after we go like exploring Hawaii, and her showing me like all the cool places around Oahu, we would go back home, and at night I would play through Donkey Kong 64. But the real challenge was, because, you know, it's an old system and we're trying to plug it into a modern TV, everything worked except the sound. And so I remember having to play through the Donkey Kong arcade game, and like the trouble is like the springs, and you really have to listen to like when they're jumping and whatnot to really like nail getting through, going out and then back in towards Donkey. And I remember beating it with no sound, and once I beat it, I was like, I'm going to beat this game again, mm-hmm. and it's going to be awesome, because that's the moment where once you beat that, it's like, okay, like,
yeah.
I can get to the final boss. And then the other moment that was actually really challenging without sound, I brought it up for a second earlier, was the cardboard boss fight of K. Rool, where I think it's like the second to last boss fight, or maybe like the third to last boss fight, and it's like the castle level, the creepy castle level, and the boss fight is basically just like the regular like crocodile goons pretending to be K. Rool, and like there's like four walls, and you have to like shoot, like you have the entire like Kong team, and you take turns like using them, and you have to shoot them out of a barrel and hit K. Rool, the K. Rool cardboard cutout, and you have to like basically make him fall apart to beat the boss. And at first it's very simple, right? And I hadn't thought about this with the sound off, like first going into this boss fight, where how, because the arena is really big, and how you like sort of cue of like which direction you have to shoot in, there's like a light that'll pop up like a second before he pops up, and you have to time it all perfectly. And so with that visual cue, it's like, okay, like this is pretty simple. And then once you knock out the like left arm or whatever, you have to knock out his, both of his arms and his head. And after you knock out the left arm, they take out the light. And then there's two K. Rools that pop up. There's like a fake shadow one, and then there's the real one that you have to hit. And so from there, you have to use sound, because you hear him do like when he flips up, he makes like the sort of sound. And so like right when you hear that, that's when you have to go into the barrel and shoot. And since I didn't have a visual cue, it was very, very difficult to do that. And then when you hit the other arm falls off. What happens is that he starts rotating, and he'll do like ha, 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 and he'll like stay in a place for a second. So it was like really, really hard to do that without sound, because that boss fight is very like you have to use sound cues to sort of fight him. So, and then once I beat that without the audio, then I was like, okay, I don't think there's any audio things that I have to really like pay attention to anymore. Now I'm going to beat this game again, because when I went to Hawaii with her, I think that was the first time I had played Donkey Kong 64 in like 10 years or something. So it was like this cool thing to like sort of relive my childhood and sort of finally beat this game all on my own, not like not with like the help of my dad. So yeah, that was a really very proud moment for me as a Donkey Kong 64 nerd, where I had to beat both of those things without any audio.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that sort of just proves how much I know that game, where I was able to beat those things without the audio. Just like how many times I played through that game.
Dude, it's crazy that you mentioned that boss fight, because like I forgot that boss fight existed, and like I just played the game maybe 2 years ago at a friend's place. Okay. I like sat at their place for like 8 hours and just played the game, and I barely made a dent in it. And that's one thing about DK64 that I think is kind of amazing, is that it's like a huge game. Like it's probably
jam-packed,
like 30 to 40 hours. Like
I need to look up how many levels there are. And I should also look up on howlongtobeat.com.
Yeah.
How long to
beat. That young HLTB. But like, because here's the thing, there's probably like 7 or 8 levels or something like that. 6, 7, 8 levels. Like I can't remember exactly.
Yeah.
But like you basically have to beat them all like 5 times, because you have 5 different
cards. Yeah, so like you're slowly like unlocking, if you don't know the game too well, like you start the game with just Donkey, and then like the first level you, like all of your friends have been captured. So in the first level you release Diddy, in the second level you release
Tiny and
Tiny and Lanky, and then in the third level you released Chunky, which is the toy level. And but the thing is, even in the first level, there's things to do for every single Kong. So in like the first three levels, you have to go back to those levels as different characters to do like their sort of objectives, to like get all of their specific colored bananas, to get all of their colored coins, and then to
there's like a lot of stuff to do.
And yeah, because there's, for each level, how each level works out is there are just like regular tiny bananas, and there are five different colors for five each Kong. So Donkey collects the yellow bananas, Diddy collects the red bananas, Tiny collects
purple,
the purple bananas, and then Lanky collects blue, and then Chunky collects green. Mm-hmm. And there's like 100 of them, or there's like, I think 100 for each character in each level. Mm-hmm. And then in each level, there's also five golden bananas that each character has to collect. And technically, like, you can collect every golden banana as like just any Kong, but like how you unlock these golden bananas is like with like the ability of a certain Kong. So mm-hmm. like maybe you have to shoot a door down that only gets like lets feathers knock it down, so you have to go in as Tiny and shoot her feather gun at it. And then there's coins, there's like different colored coins for each character that you can use to purchase upgrades. And then each character has one for each level, one blueprint. There's a character in the game called
the Snide.
His name is Snide. Yeah. I don't know what he is, like what animal he is.
He's like a fox or he's something. He's some weird animal.
He worked for K. Rool and he was building this machine, and then he found out that the machine was going to be used to destroy Donkey Island, and he didn't want to do that, so he left. And he's like, but K. Rool blew my blueprint apart and separated all over all these different levels, so you got to collect them all. And so there's like one color for each character for each map, and so it is very much a collective.
Yeah, it's a huge game too.
So there is there's a lot of hours that you have to put into it.
Yeah, like I described the game to somebody on Twitter as like Skyrim for the N64. And like the reason I say that though, like it's different from Skyrim, right? Skyrim is like it's a completely different game, but like that game feels huge. At least for the time, that game felt like enormous. And I feel like it still is enormous.
Yep.
And the way the game unfolds is, you like complete one thread and like five more threads open like every single time. Like every time you complete something, there's like 10 more activities that it feels like open up. Like when you unlock Diddy, you're then like, okay, well, and actually I want to give a shout out to this game also for kind of being like the first Metroidvania that I played. The N64 was my first console, and playing DK64 was like my first exposure to that kind of style of gameplay and opening things up. And so like on your way to an objective, right, you'd pass by, or if you're playing as like Donkey Kong, you'd pass by like a switch that has like a grape on it, and you're like, okay, well, I can't do anything to that. Then like as you keep going, you see like a pad that has like Tiny's face on it, and you're like, well, obviously I can't do anything with that. And like you keep going, you see like gates that you can't go through, and you see like different things that you can't do. You see like a hill that you can't go up because you keep sliding down, and you're like, how the heck do I do any of these things? But then the more you play,
I remember being a kid like looking at that hill in the first level, I am Donkey, there's a hill, I should be able to go up this. And then later you get Lanky, I was like, oh, okay, that's how you do it.
Yeah, and like it was my first Metroidvania that I played. I don't know if other people would call it Metroidvania. I'd call it a Metroidvania.
I'd give it like a Metroidvania-esque sort of maybe inspired sort of thing.
Yeah, it has
I see where you're going. Where like the further you push in like one objective, like sort of you unlock different areas of like a level and stuff. Yeah,
and
I
like
totally see that.
It just keeps unthreading until like at a certain point you just look around. And you're like, I have so many things I could do at any given point that it's hard to get tired. And I think that like goes back to your comparison to Super Mario 64. Or like Super Mario 64 is like probably my favorite game ever, but and they're both like the same genre of game, but they're completely different. I understand what you're saying, where like if you get stuck in Mario 64, then like you're kind of just stuck. But if you get stuck in DK64, you're like, I have a million other things that I could do right now, and like I could go test out. And the game is just so, like, I think DK64 is much more of a sandbox game than Mario 64 is, because you walk into a level and there is just so many things to do, and you're not going for like one specific objective on a run. You're going for like, you're just walking around being like, okay, there's like
trying to figure out the layout and what's going on and like how to bring sort of the pieces of the puzzle together.
Yeah. And from there, I want to ask this. Is DK64 a good game?
I would say yes. And I think a lot of the flack it gets is it's a collectathon. They went overboard with the collectathon. There's too many collectibles. And it's like, okay, yeah. And like I said earlier, I was too young to really compare it to anything. So I just thought that's how the way games were. And even going back to it 10 years later, learning about games and going back to it, I still adore it. And I think, it makes the game way too long. I looked it up on how long to beat. On average, it takes 33 hours to beat Donkey Kong 64, which is crazy to think about, that there's that long of a game on the N64.
Yeah.
And so I would say it's good. I think there are a lot of faults, but I think, overall, there's, like you said, they have, this sort of Metroidvania-esque sort of style in each level, and there's a lot of cool mini games in the game that you have to do to unlock to collect these golden bananas. The ones that stick out to me are in the second level where you're in the desert. There's this sort of crypt pyramid thing, and you have to go. There's a door for each Kong, and you go through, and it's sort of a maze, and there's a golden banana at the end of the maze. You gotta get there in a certain amount of time, and then you have to leave in a certain amount of time, because if you leave before the timer runs out before you leave, then you basically die and you have to do it all over again.
Yeah.
And there's little objective, small objective mini games that I thought were really, really fun. There's also a couple mini game objectives to get golden bananas that were fucking infuriating and not well designed.
Oh, dude,
at all.
Yeah.
I mentioned the beetle race earlier. There's a level where there's a couple levels where you have to race this fucking beetle. Let me tell you.
I played that yesterday. I was trying to capture footage because I was maybe I should put this as a video thing. And so I was capturing DK64 footage yesterday, and I got to that part with Tiny. And you're racing the beetle on Aztec, whatever it's called, that level.
Yeah.
And I was dude, I remember hating this because it's so impossible. There's that. They're and also DK64 has a lot of mini games too, the bonus barrels or whatever they're called.
You'll go into these barrels and there's sort of different mini games for each Kong. So there's one where Donkey is in the sky and there are these moving barrels and you got to shoot out of them at the right time. And then there's also top down ones where you have to hit a fly with a fly swatter, and that one's also very infuriating.
Yeah, that one's hard.
There's one where there are mice walking across the screen, and then there's snakes along the screen, and you have to shoot watermelons into the snakes' mouths to make sure that the snakes don't eat the mice. And once you get a certain amount of mice across the screen, you get a golden banana. There's all of these weird little mini games that some worked really well and then some didn't. There's a lot of those mini barrel things. There's underwater ones that, underwater levels in any sort of 3D platformer just suck.
Mm-hmm.
When you had to go and swim and try to hit all these points, it was infuriating. There's a combo mix of things that really worked well and then some things that you're that we could have done without that one. So
yeah. For me, when it comes to is DK64 a good game, I think my answer would have immediately be yeah. It's a good game with one central problem that for a lot of people maybe could ruin the game, which I think it did, but for other people, people like me, I think enjoyed it. The amount of collectibles there are in that game is ridiculous. Like you said before, you can collect the small bananas for each different Kong, you can collect the golden bananas, you can connect the colored coins for each different Kong, you can collect the fairies, you had to take the photographs of the different fairies that are flying around.
The pictures of the fairies,
And then there's I don't even know what these things are called. There's these banana medallions that you get for doing special things.
Those are basically you have these fight arenas that you can go into, and if you win this fight arena, it'll basically be a platform, and there's a dark pit around the platform. If you get knocked off, you lose, but if you win, you get a basically like a rainbow coin, and if you get that, like, it just gives you a bunch of coins to use to upgrade.
Yeah, and then like there's a bunch of ammo for like, there's, you can get your gun ammo, you can get your grenade, your orange grenades, you can get your camera ammo, you can get like your ammo for your instrument that you need. I don't know why they would need ammo for their instrument, but like you can get that too.
Yeah, that was so dumb.
And like the game, like the game is basically just running around just collecting things, but also I mean there's a lot to it, but also there half the game is just finding stuff, and that's for me part of the fun. Like it's like a large, just like a gigantic scavenger hunt. Where you're just trying to, where you're just going around collecting things, figuring things out. And I think that could, that for a lot of people, that could be a flaw, and that is a flaw. But as far as like the things, like I feel like the game does extraordinarily well. I think the cutscenes in the game are really good. Like when you begin every level,
funny too.
Yeah, and they're hilarious. And like for people who don't know, the cutscenes in DK64, basically King K. Rool is watching all the Kongs as they progress through each of the levels, and like he's just getting mad at his henchmen the whole time. And these cutscenes are actually pretty funny. They're pretty like, they're pretty well done cutscenes. There's that. There's the animations. I feel like the different animations for each of the Kongs are pretty like well done. I mean, they're not like, I like to compare this game to Mario 64 a lot because it's an easy comparison. But like Mario 64, I think, does animation differently, right? Well, Donkey Kong 64 or Mario 64, I feel like, feels good to play. Like when you jump, you like press B to like dive, all this stuff, all that stuff like feels super accurate, super smooth. DK64, I feel like, just has a lot of unique animations. So like Tiny, like if you press A to jump and press A again, she does like a spin thing with her hair where she like flies for a bit. Or like if you press which with each of the Kongs, right, if you're running and you press B, they do like a running move or like a slide move or whatever, and like each action is different for each Kong, but still like has personality and has like a certain like feel to it that I think is great. And as far as like content in general, like it's a huge game, and I don't know, I'm not saying like huge makes a game good, but like as far as like it's not lacking content at all, is what I'll say. And so, like,
and to bounce off like the personality thing, I love, like, one of my favorite moments is just going into the character select, and like everybody's like, pick me, and when you select them, they're like, all right, and then you get to like Chunky, like when he's in the background, he's like, yeah, come here, and then when you go to select Chunky, he's like, oh, he's no, like, never mind, yeah. I'm really scared.
He's like, no, pick her,
like,
pick her.
Yes, the personality in each Kong feels very unique with everyone. It's just. And that's, like, part of the charm, right? It's, like, all of the weird, funny characters that you meet throughout the game. Like, K. Lumsy, which is, like, K. Rool's brother, who's locked up in this cave on, like, K. Rool's sort of boat. And the main thing with the game is, like, every level, every boss that you fight, you get a key, and then you unlock the key to K. Lumsy's sort of like prison, because he doesn't want to kill the monkeys. He wants to be the monkey's friend, so he's gonna like help you fight K. Rool. So the entire game is basically trying to unlock him, and like he's really like, when you go in, he's like, I love monkeys and they're the best, and he's like a complete opposite to his brother, and it's really funny. And and then. Yeah, like, you have Snide, who's, like, sort of the like, cool, like, whatever, I'm, like, sort of, like, a hipster, and I totally smoke cigarettes in the back of this shop or whatever, and then you meet,
dude.
Who's the guy who gives you, like, your gun?
Oh, yeah, I was about to reference him, and, like, Candy is the girl who,
Candy,
like,
Kong, yeah.
I was playing this game yesterday, and, man, like, this game is rated E for everyone, but this game gets away with so much. Like, like you walk into Candy shop and like dude, just,
it's about to go down.
Yeah, you're like, what the heck is this? Like, I was playing yesterday, I was like, dude, I can't believe it. As a child, I was exposed to this. Like, what were my parents thinking? Like, Candy is just like this sensual, like huge breasted like monkey, which is weird. Yeah. But and the hilarious thing is that in Candy shop, when each of the different Kongs go in there, they're like in this like kind of like flirt, I don't know if you call it a flirty position, or like they're trying to be cool,
like,
or trying to be like, oh, what's
hey
good
girl.
What's
like,
good Candy,
yeah, what's up,
yeah,
yeah. And like that's the funny thing, like she's the reason why like K. Rool, you beat K. Rool at the end, because like after like Chunky like punches K. Rool, they go into a cutscene where Candy distracts K. Rool, and then the guy, I forget the Kong's name that gives you your weapons. But then, like, behind K. Rool, since Candy's distracting him, he, like, has, like, this big, like, rocket launcher that he shoots at K. Rool, and then K. Rool, like, goes blasting off or whatever.
Mm.
Yeah, Candy was very, like, way too sexual for that game, I think.
Yeah.
Especially with, like, that, the sexy sax playing in her store. Yeah, and then, like, everything about her. Who supplies you your... the guy who supplies you your weapons, you walk in, it's, like, this sort of, like, badass sort of action movie, like, music, and, yeah, there's, like, a lot of personality to that game that I totally treasure.
Yeah. Is it Funky Kong? Is that him? Or is that a different one?
Let me look that up.
I'm like, looking it up right now. I think it's Funky Kong.
I just
Kong.
Need to see...
That doesn't sound right, but I...
just need Funky Kong.
He has, like, a bandana and some sunglasses on. I'm not... Maybe that's from a different game.
No, Funky Kong, I think, is from Donkey Kong Country.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I'm going to look this up. Kong that supplies weapons in DK64. Yeah, I guess it is Funky Kong.
You wouldn't expect it, but I think...
Yeah,
yeah.
He's got, like, a sort of different... design, I guess.
He was in DK Country, and then I think he came back in DK64, and they're like, "What do we do with this guy?" And they probably just put him in that position. Is my guess.
Yeah.
What's your favorite thing about DK64?
So we're talking about, like, the amount of collectibles, and it does get, like, really ridiculous. But one of the smartest things I think the game does is, like, not only, like, do you have to beat the original Donkey Kong arcade game, and then you have to beat what was the other arcade game called?
Jetpack. Yeah.
But then, with the blueprints that you find, the blueprints are actually, and I don't know if a lot of people know this, they're completely optional, which I thought was really, really cool. So, you know, you go to Snide and you collect the blueprints, and the blueprints are for this, like, weapon that's supposed to destroy the island. And they sort of tease, like, what the weapon is throughout the game. You'll see, like, cutscenes of them, like, working on it, and, like, all, like, silly cutscenes where they suck at making the machine and everything's going wrong, but they eventually make it. And so this is, like, sort of the last level before you have to fight K. Rool. And if you collect none of the blueprints, you can go to this level, but you only get, like, 5 minutes to beat the entire level. And there's, like, sort of... I think there's, like, one main thing for each Kong to do. Like, they each have, like, one room that, like, when they... do this objective specifically for this Kong, it breaks a part of the machine or something. But if you collect all blueprints, it gives you, like, 50 minutes to complete the level. So I thought, like, that was, like, something I really thought, like, was totally cool. That, like, they don't tell you this, like, throughout the game. They don't tell you, like, hey, you have to collect the blueprints or you totally get screwed on trying to beat this level. Or, you know, like, they just sort of... they let you sort of figure it out on your own. I thought that was really, really cool. Where with every other collectible, it's like, hey, you have to have this amount of golden bananas to get into this level. You have to have this amount of colored bananas to fight this boss, you know? Mm-hmm. And with, like, the blueprint collectibles, it was very different. Where, you know, they had to make you figure out on your own if those were worth collecting or not.
Interesting.
And I just remember that. I just remember... me being, like, my 5 or 6 year old self being blown away. I was like, whoa, that's crazy. And I would say, like, again, like I said earlier, just, like, the diverse levels of just, like, how fascinating some of these levels are. It reminds me a lot of... there's another game for the N64 called Tonic Trouble, which was a very, very early Ubisoft game. And you're this space alien named Ed who accidentally drops soda onto Earth, and the soda is, like, not healthy for Earth, and it turns all of these, like, natural things into crazy enemies and whatnot, and you have to go down there and fix everything. Mm. And it reminded me a lot of Tonic Trouble, where each level was, like, this weird, zany, like, thing going on, like, where you had, like, the sort of... you know, you started off with, like, a normal jungle, like, the first level, and then you go to a desert, and then you go to a castle, and then you go to a toy factory. Like, the toy factory is probably, like, my favorite level. It's because of, like, sort of, you know, when you're 5, it's, like, it's not really creepy, but, like, when you're 5 and they're playing the creepy music and all the toys are, like, trying to... yeah. And, Yeah, it was just like the personality and like the diversity of like what each level was. It didn't feel like one, like, okay, this it's not like I would say like the best example I can give is like BioShock, where you go into BioShock, you go into Rapture, and like, you know, that's the tone. That's the tone of the entire game. It's like this dark, dreary, underwater sort of thing, or like Uncharted, where it's sort of like adventure and sort of, you know, it's this one thing. With Donkey Kong 64, it was like every level was like its own sort of world, and I really loved that. So I would say like those two would probably be like my favorite things about the about that game.
Yeah, that's actually a good point that I actually hadn't really thought about. Like the fact the Toy Factory always kind of creeped me out as a kid, and I think it was just because like the enemies in that level were like they're like sentient like objects, which was probably had a huge thing to do with it. Like you see a domino just running after you to kill you, and you'd be like, "Oh, well, that's
He's got the angry eyes, and you're like, "Oh no, I never want to play dominoes again."
Yeah, it was like that's the scariest thing I've ever seen in my life. And yeah, like that stuff was awesome. Random question: have you ever played Jet Force Gemini?
It sounds familiar. Let me look it up. But tell me about it.
Another Rare game on N64, and it's basically like a third person shooter. You play as a guy, a girl, and a dog. But it's like it's another game that's like really up there for me. And I think I might have gotten both these games at the same time. Might have been in the same package. But like I think both of them have similar qualities to them, not in like tone or like story or anything, because they're a completely different game. One is a sci-fi, one's a platformer, but like I think the feedback of the game is very similar, where it's like you in DK64 you do something, you get rewarded, and then there's like a bunch of other things to do, and then you're like okay, which one do I want to do? Then you just go you go in a random direction and you do something, you get rewarded, and you're like, okay, what to do now? And you keep doing things and just keep getting rewarded over and over again. I think that's my favorite thing about the game, is that feedback loop, and is that like how much you get rewarded for just like just playing. I find that
like where every moment where you collect like the golden banana, and it's like when I played it in Hawaii, I didn't have any audio, so I didn't like remember like the sort of sounds, because a lot of people like associate smell with nostalgia, and like it that is very true, but also it's like sound and music for me. And so when DK64 became available on the Wii U, I totally picked that up immediately. And I was like, that was the first time I got to play it with sound in like 10 years. And so like when you collect a golden banana, it's like, oh, banana.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's like always that, like that feeling of like, I'm being rewarded right now. This is a great moment, you know? And yeah, I would say also like the sound design in that game is really, really, really fun. Like every level has like another reason why the Toy Factory level feels creepy is because of the music and how slow, because like most of the other levels, it's like happy, fast paced, like sort of whatever. And then like the Toy Factory is like very slow. There's like high note bells that are playing, and it's just like, it's eerie and it's creepy. And you go to the Jungle Japes or whatever the first level is called, and it's sort of like fun, funky music that weirdly fits the sort of tone of this level. And again, it helps with like the sort of diversity of each level, making it feel like its own world. So I would also say like the music and like the sort of sound design in that game is really, really good.
Yeah, dude. We kind of already touched on this, but what does the game do bad? Like we touched on the collectathon thing. Is there anything else where it feels like they really missed the bar on this, or this is the reason why people maybe shouldn't like this game, or maybe the reason why people maybe didn't like this game back in the day?
So we talked a little bit also on like the mini games, and like I said, like some of them work, some of them totally don't work. I just recently had to like totally get through the fly swatter one after playing this game for about 18 years of my life. I finally figured out like the key to beating the fly swatter minigame, and then there's like the underwater sort of mini games that you have to go through that are really, really bad. And then I would also say like not every level, but there are some key levels that I feel like have very bad design. One of them would be like the lagoon level, where it's basically like
I was gonna say the same thing,
water
actually.
Level.
Yeah.
And it's not because it's a water level, weirdly enough, because it's not even a full water level. It's like half of it's in water and half of it's above ground. I would say just like how everything is spaced out in that level is just very, it's, you have to go back and forth and back and forth between these two big areas that have water for like one puzzle or one thing that you have to do to get a golden banana. Mm-hmm. You have to like go back and forth, and it's
that level like actually like that was a level that stumped me as a kid. Like I got hard like blocked on that level, and I couldn't progress from maybe like probably a year, like because it does actually a few things that I think just stops you in your tracks. Like one of them is to get like the special ability from Cranky Kong for that on that level, like you have to have a certain number of something. I can't remember what it is, but it's like you have to have a certain amount of colored coins,
and I think golden bananas.
He starts taking something else on that level, and whatever it is, it's like you have to put in some work to like get up to that point. There's that. Yeah. There's the fact that I think that was the first level that introduced like the cavemen with like the large things.
Oh yeah, with the swinging, like, and I like you can't beat them. You can't kill them at all.
You can't kill them with your regulars. I think you can kill them with your grenades, but also like I think when they swing at you, wait, you can't. Oh, that's crazy.
No, they hit the grenades back at you. That's something else that I played it like a year or two ago. Like that's probably the most recent I've played it, and I remember like when I got to that level, and I was like, okay, you can't go. If you get close to them, they start swinging. Mm-hmm. You can't shoot. Even if you shoot them and they don't react, like the gun doesn't do anything. So it's got to be the grenade. And I remember throwing the grenade and he swatted the grenade back. I was like, fuck. You just can't beat him.
And like he takes off, I want to say, multiple points of health. Like when if he gets you that.
He really damages you.
Yeah. And so that was a point in that game where I was like, dude, first of all, this level scares me. I don't know what it is about this level. It's like really eerie and I don't feel comfortable here.
Yeah.
Two, like Cranky's being stupid over here. And also like this caveman just keeps killing me. And this level's like really confusing. Like there's a lot of things in that level where I think maybe that level's designed to like to slow you down a little bit. I don't know. But that was one level where I was like, I can't do this.
That was, like, the first level where it was like, okay, there's definitely a, like, we could have done without this level.
Yeah.
I really like that boss fight, though. It's, you play as Lanky, mm-hmm. and there's a blowfish in the middle of, like, sort of the arena. And you have to, like, go through these stars to, like, help, like, blow up the blowfish. I remember, like, actually really liking that boss fight.
What's your favorite boss fight?
And then, oh, man. That's a great question. There's the armadillo.
There's the dragon. That Diddy Kong faces.
There's the dragonfly.
There's the tiny boss.
And there's the tiny boss with like the jack in the box.
Yeah.
And then there's the blowfish. And then I think you fight the armadillo again.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And then you fight the dragonfly again. And then I'm trying to think of like...
Yeah. Hmm. I think after the dragonfly again is like the fake K. Rool thing.
Yeah, I think, yeah. And then you get fake K. Rool, and I think then you fight K. Rool himself. And I would have to say probably the Jack in the Box is my favorite
one.
Just because of like, I love that, like, the Toy Factory level is so creepy, and like that boss fight, like, is a great example of why that level is so, because he's jumping around all, like, if you don't know, like, the way the arena's set out is, like, there's these, it's like a 9x9 sort of almost like a chessboard, but the platforms are, but each, like, sort of square is separated, so he's jumping from platform to platform, and then, like, when you see him first bump out, he's, like, this really crazy, like, looking, like, weird creature dude. He's got, like, electricity going through his hair, and he's just really creepy, and you're just, like, this tiny little Girl Kong, and you're like, I don't know what to do, and then you slowly learn like how to beat him, and then at one point, like after you hit him a couple of times with like how you hit him is like eventually like little squares will pop up on some of the platforms, you gotta get to them in time, and then like when you stop down on him, like a certain platform will electrocute him, and when you get him a couple of times, he just turns invisible.
Yeah.
And then you have like the way you, like you get cued on where he's at is like when you go onto a platform, they alternate colors between blue and white. And when you're on a platform, like, the light will, like, pop up. So you have to, like, pay attention to, like, what is lighting up. Sometimes he'll jump over, like, two platforms and whatnot. And, like, that boss fight, like, sort of brought together, like, that entire level of, like, it's creepy, it's unnerving, I don't know what to do right now. And he's doing all this crazy stuff, but then you finally beat him. And
it was super challenging, too. Rewarding. Like, you had to be super quick on that boss fight. Or else he was gonna get you. Also, like the animations for this game are amazing. And the animation of him like getting electrocuted is super freaky and like super like you can feel the pain he's going through. Dude. Like, I think.
And then I would also say like K. Rool. Like I said earlier, that was like the moment where I was like, I really love this game. Where like you bring in all of the different like abilities of every Kong to finally take on K. Rool. That's, like, one of my favorite moments in games ever.
Yeah.
Is, like, that final boss fight and bringing in all the special abilities and finally taking down K. Rool. It's, like, it's so satisfying.
Dude, like, the thing you said about the blueprints actually kind of blows my mind a little bit because, like, I actually didn't know that. I don't think I knew that. And, like, you know, like, back in the days of, like, playground rumors and, like, talking to your friends to figure out, like, how to beat a game or play games? I had one friend that lied to me about so much, like... This guy, and I believed him every time because I was young and dumb, but, like, he told me that in Smash Bros., like, you can unlock Goku by, like, playing as Luigi and then, like, pressing L1, his, or not L1, maybe L1, his taunt to, like, kick every character or something like that. Then, like, he was like, oh, yeah, in Mario, you can, like, surf in one level. And then, like, in DK64, the lie he told me was that he told me that if you get all the blueprints that you can like beat the game before you're actually supposed to beat the game, which sounds like that sounds legit.
Yeah.
But then he also
it was all for that last level.
He also told me that there was an invisible timer like the whole time, and if you don't beat this game in like 50 hours, then like you just lose the game and like and King K. Rool wins and like he blows up DK Island. And I was like, there's no way. And I don't think that too also is a lie, unless it's not a lie. I haven't looked it up, but like.
I don't think that's also true. But that again, that's like a creative like little like that kid was fucking vindictive right there. He's like, I'm gonna lie to Blessing over here, but I'm gonna make realistic lies and make him question his reality.
Yeah, I was like, dude, that's like, crazy. I grew up and I was like, I still don't know if those lies are true. Like those could still be like true things. I never verified them. Even with the internet.
But like to go back a couple other levels I think like have, because there's like I think three levels like out of the entire game I think just have like general bad like level design where it all feels like way too spread out. It's like the water level, I think, and not because it's a water level, just because like how everything is spaced out. Mm-hmm. And then also the creepy castle level I don't think is well designed. And then there's the cave level where it's like all these crystals.
The crystal cave.
Yeah, the Crystal Cave, I like that one. I remember hating that level, I think even more than the water level when I first played it, just because of like just how weirdly you have to navigate throughout this whole level.
And that level had a weird thing where, I think it had a weird thing where like the icicles would drop at random places and they could damage you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was annoying.
Because there's like there's a big like caveman dude like at the very top of the map. Mm-hmm. Who like whenever he would smash like whenever he'd smash his hammer, then like the cave would just start like dropping all these crystals, and you have to like find some sort of cover. That was like, it was like a interesting idea like on paper, but then like when you play it like in real life, it's
one of those things where like you spend so much time in these levels that you don't really want something distracting you the whole time, because like I'm probably gonna spend like 2 to 4 hours in this level, and you don't want me like evading these icicles for like that much time. Like I understand where they're going, but it didn't work.
So I would say like those were probably like the three standout levels where it's just like, okay, this probably could have been cut.
What's your favorite level? Is it that the toy level, I'm guessing?
It's the toy level. I really like the last level where like the blueprints where you have to like go and like, basically destroy this machine. I really like that one as well. Mm. And I think I think the first level like for me just as a child is like iconic. And then I also really like the Aztec level. Just because you become friends with a llama at one point, and that llama was super tight. And
really chill. And,
that
llama.
There's like at one point where like there's a pool of fire, and he's like sort of sleeping, and he sneezes, and like he extinguishes the fire with his sneeze, and it turns into a pool of water, and you're like, I don't understand how that makes sense, but all right.
Yeah, that's what that chain reaction thing in the game is like. I mean, that's pretty much the whole game is doing one thing to get the other to trigger this next thing to happen so that you can go get this thing. And probably half of them didn't make any sense, like that llama thing. I think I forget how you trigger. I think you like play your guitar on a pad or something to trigger him and spin in this thing. And
yeah it's very, it's almost like it has like a little bit of Metroidvania, and like it's definitely a collectathon, but there's like also like sort of like an old school like LucasArts adventure game in a way, where you're like, okay, I obviously need to trigger this to get through here, but how do I do that? And then you eventually figure it out, like you said, like I gotta play my guitar to wake this llama up so he can sneeze and then sneeze into a pool. It's like, what, how was I supposed to connect that, you know? Like, it reminds me a lot of Grim Fandango, where it's like, how do I get out of this level? Oh, you need a magnet thing to pull out keys from this cat litter, and you were never told that the keys were actually in the cat litter, and it's just like, what, how the fuck was I supposed to connect these things?
Exactly. I mean in a weird way I also liken this game to The Witness. Like this game and Banjo-Kazooie, I liken them to The Witness, only because, I mean, not too much, but like only because they're all games where you enter this world and you're like, okay, where do I go from here? And you enter like if you haven't played The Witness, then it's probably gonna be lost on you. But like, if like you go to a certain area, and there's just like a bunch of stuff to do, and like in this area, and you spend time, kind of like unthreading what's going on here, and like you stare at this issue, you stare at this problem, you're like, how do I do this? And you eventually figure it out. You go to the next thing. How do I do this? You eventually figure it out. You finish this area, then you move on to the next, and kind of have that same kind of thing happen where you just look and you're like, okay, what do I need to do? How do I figure out this next problem? And the whole game is basically, the whole game kind of connects to each other. Like each level in DK64 kind of feeds into like this main objective. Each level, each area in The Witness kind of feeds into this main thing. I plan to do a video on that, but I still gotta word it out in my head and figure that whole thing out, because I think there's something there. But like, I had another question. Banjo-Kazooie. So, like, have you played Banjo-Kazooie?
Not all the way through. I probably, like, the last time I played Banjo was when I was a kid, like, around the same time, like, playing through Donkey Kong 64. And I think I only got through, like, the first two, like, sort of worlds. I totally don't remember, like, how that game is laid out. But I remember playing it before Donkey Kong 64. And it was just like, okay, like, this seems all right. I don't really know who these characters are and whatnot. Like this wasn't, you know, as a kid, it's like, this isn't an IP that I know and stuff. So I think it was like DK64 for me, at least, was like way more accessible, just because I knew who Donkey Kong was. I played him all the time in Mario Kart, you know? So it was like going to Banjo. It was like, oh, there's a bear and he's got a bird, and they walk around and they do stuff. That's all right. I don't know, it just never spoke to me as a kid, and then like eventually, like growing up, I do want to go back and play those games, but they're only available through Rare Replay on the Xbox One, and I do not own an Xbox One, so
I think, oh, you don't have, okay, I was gonna say, yeah, because I have it actually through Rare Replay on Xbox One. I was gonna say, like, I played Banjo-Kazooie for the first time this last year, and I still haven't beat it. I'm like maybe past halfway through, and the key difference is It's like the same game, except just imagine DK64 with one character, and that, I think that's pretty much it, actually. Just imagine DK64 with one character, and that's Banjo-Kazooie. And I think the main gameplay difference, I think the key thing is that there's collectibles, but there's a lot less collectibles in Banjo-Kazooie. It's a lot more manageable. It's a lot more. You can foresee a world which you actually fully complete a level. Like there are levels in Banjo-Kazooie that I've fully like 100%ed, and that's not a thing that I think I've done in DK64, maybe apart from like the first level in DK64.
DK64, if you don't know, like, definitely you don't have to collect everything, unless you're my dad, who was like, I need to find every single banana ever. Like, there are some golden bananas that you can find outside of the levels themselves. So, yeah. Sorry, I was going somewhere and then I lost where I was going.
Yeah,
with that,
like so. That's like the key difference between the two games. And like I still think I personally prefer DK64. Just for like how big the game feels and the breadth of content and the personality. That's it. I think Banjo-Kazooie also has personality, but I feel like DK64 just has like a wide variety of personality, whereas like Banjo-Kazooie is only like you have Banjo, you have Kazooie, you have like the witch character who like says stuff throughout the game. You have like her sister who's like a fairy. You have the guy who like turns you into animals. But I could name all the characters in Banjo-Kazooie. Meanwhile, like in DK64, like I could name like the main characters who are like the Kongs, the five Kongs, Snide, K. Rool, Cranky, Funky, Candy, the Llama. Then I can just go into like all the side characters. Like the Llama is like a super side character, like a tertiary character or whatever. But like, you can go into the depths and be like, okay, there's a lot of people. Like there's that thing, the beetle that you race. There's like,
fuck that.
That beetle's the worst.
There's also the rabbit. There's another like race thing that where you race a rabbit as Lanky.
Oh, I remember that.
You get a power up as Lanky where like he has very long arms, right? So, the main way like Lanky can like run is doing a handstand and running really fast, and you have to do a race against a rabbit who is also a piece of shit, and I fucking hate.
Yeah, that rabbit's the worst.
That little like sort of side mission. You don't have to beat. I think you have to beat the beetle once, I think, just to be able to progress through the game. But I don't think you have to beat him the second time. I definitely remember that you don't have to beat the rabbit, because the last time I played it, I just totally avoided him and I was still able to beat the game.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's another beautiful thing about the game is that there's so much stuff that you don't have to do. Like, if you get super frustrated on a part, you can just skip over it for the most part. Like, there are some things that you do have to do. Like, you do have to play the original Donkey Kong, and you do have to, like, do quite a few things. But for the most part, like, as long as you can complete, like, something else somewhere else, like, you're good. Yeah.
It gives you a little leeway of, like, what you want to do a little bit. And I looked up how long Banjo-Kazooie is, where Donkey Kong 64 was 33 hours on average. Banjo-Kazooie is 12 and a half on average. So it's like a third of the time.
Yeah.
So I guess that's probably because, you know, you only have to play as one character for each level instead of five.
Yeah, and like a lot of the abilities from DK64 are in Banjo-Kazooie, just in like a weird other way. Like in Banjo-Kazooie, instead of having like Lanky Kong do like his handstand walk thing, there's a version of that in Banjo-Kazooie where like Kazooie is just walking for you, and a lot of that stuff kind of translates in an interesting way. Or I guess, I don't know, I guess in a way, like, they took Banjo-Kazooie, and then kind of divided him up into Donkey Kong 64. But then also, like, they developed each character fully enough to where each character does feel like their own thing. It doesn't feel like you're playing one-fifth of Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah, they all feel important.
Yeah, exactly. They're all, like, a piece of a puzzle. And that's not supposed to be like a magic, because we referenced collecting puzzle pieces in that game. But I guess we can wrap up from here. Do you have any last
words? I
think
the one thing,
go ahead.
The last thing I'll say, since we're talking like Donkey Kong 64 mainly, but then sprinkling in other Rare games, like I'm excited for Yooka-Laylee.
Oh, yeah.
Like Yooka-Laylee is probably like one of my most anticipated games right now, just because it's those like original guys who were purchased by Microsoft and were forced to make t-shirts for avatars on Xbox Live. And it was like really depressing to see like what Microsoft did to that studio. And then it was like awesome to hear like they left, they're making their own studio, and they're going to make this game called Yooka-Laylee, and it's going to be totally like Banjo-Kazooie and sort of like Donkey Kong 64, where you have like these two characters that are teaming up, and you have like these beautiful, like sort of crazy worlds that you got to go through. I was able to play Yooka-Laylee a little bit at this last PSX, and I played it like I was waiting in line for like the longest time. It was like the first booth I saw, so I was like, all right, I'm waiting here. And right when I got up to play, our good mutual friend Alex O'Neill walks by, and he's like, can I just like sit next to you and like watch you play this really quick? And so we played probably like 15-20 minutes of it, And it was, like, Alex described it the best way. It was, like, Christmas morning for both of us where, you know, I think, for Donkey Kong 64 with Alex, he's like, it's okay, it's whatever. Mm-hmm. It's not terrible, but there are definitely a lot of flaws. But there is something about the style of ukulele that, like, it brings back all of those memories of playing Donkey Kong 64, mm-hmm. playing Banjo-Kazooie, where, like, you open up, like, at least for this demo that I played, you're playing as ukulele, and you go up, and the first character you meet is called Trouser Snake,
yeah.
which is fucking hilarious. And, like, the way, like, the snake, like, fits into pants is, like, completely ridiculous. And, mm-hmm. like, there's all these tongue-in-cheek characters. There's, like, a portion of the game where you turn yourself into, like, a flower, and then you're impregnating, like, all of these different, like, lady flowers, and they're like, yo, like, why are you cheating on me with that flower and all this? Like, there's, like, just, like, these weird, like, for kids, it's totally going over their heads. Mm-hmm. They're like, okay, yeah, I'm just doing this. But for adults, it's like, this is fucking hilarious yeah. how much they're getting away with. And, like, the entire time Alex and I were playing ukulele, we were just, like, big grins on our faces, totally loving the controls, so I'm loving it, like, totally reminiscing in, like, the feeling of Banjo-Kazooie and Donkey Kong 64. So I just want to say, like, ukulele, I'm so hyped for
it.
That sort of return to form of, like, that those creators, you know?
Yeah, dude. Like, I'm super hyped for that game, especially having just played Banjo-Kazooie. I feel like now I have, like, the full context of, like, what this game is pulling from. Have you played Conker's Bad Fur Day, by the way?
Conker is another one that I played. I think I probably played, like, halfway through that one, of the first one. And then mm-hmm. I played a lot of the one that was on the original Xbox One, the sequel.
The Reloaded one?
Yeah. I played a lot of that one. But I don't remember them too well because it's been, jeez, it's been about, like, 12 years, I would say, since I've played those games.
So, like, all these games, like DK64, Conker, Banjo, like, all of them have very similar, like, this British humor that I yeah. think hit hard and hit well because of the style of these games. Like, they're not super narrative heavy, they're not super, like, deep or anything like that. Not to say that the British can't be deep, because, I mean, I've watched Luther, but, like, the humor is just very poignant and very, like, it hits well and it hits where it needs to, and it's not, like, it's not hovering over the game like Conker, maybe. Like, the Conker, it's very heavy with the humor, but it works for what that game's trying to be. And Banjo-Kazooie has, like, its yeah. moments of, like, hey, here's, like, a funny, like, name for a character, here's, like, a funny, like, one, like, a piece of dialogue or something like that. And even DK64, like, here's Candy with, like, the huge breast or whatever. Like the humor in these games strikes so well. And from what I've heard of ukulele, I haven't played it yet. I really can't wait for it to come out. But from what I've heard of it, like, it keeps that tone, and it keeps a lot of the yeah. things that make these games. And so I'm really hyped for it. And, like, I was going to ask you, like, should people play DK64 in 2017? But I think you maybe have just answered it in saying that, like, ukulele is coming out. And so, like, I don't know. What do you think?
Basically. That's interesting because it's my sister's birthday. The day that we're recording this, it'll be her birthday this coming Friday. Mm-hmm. And I plan on sort of trying to pre-order the Switch, or if I can't pre-order it, like, eventually picking it up on Amazon or something, because they're doing this pretend scarcity thing like Nintendo always mm-hmm. does. So it's going to be really hard to eventually pick up a Switch, but I'm going to do it. And so the only console my sister has at home is a Wii. And over Christmas break, I went home and I played Mario Kart Wii with my sister. I was like, oh, God, these controls are so bad. And so for her birthday, I'm going to send her my Wii U with, like, all of these old school games. I've got, like, Super Mario Brothers, Super Mario World, Legend of Zelda Link to the Past. And then I also have Donkey Kong 64 on there. And I'm, like, really excited and interested to see, mm-hmm. like, what she has to say specifically about Donkey Kong 64. And in today's standards, like, I don't want to offend you at all or anything, but you said earlier, like, Super Mario 64 is, like, one of your favorite games. And I purchased both of them on the Wii U around the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's, like, a lot of, like, strong feelings about, like, Donkey Kong 64 is not good whatsoever. And there's a lot of people who feel that way. And, like, going back and playing both of those games, like, back to back, I feel like DK64 holds up way better than Mario 64. Just because I think the way Mario 64 is, like, designed, it's very much like a sort of tech demo of like what that hardware could do. Mm-hmm. And there's like definitely like it's fun, but like playing it today, it feels very not light, like soulless almost in a way, but there's a lot of like just empty spaces mm-hmm. of like, I don't feel excited playing this game at all. And there's definitely like moments of like that in DK64, like we said, like with some of the levels and their design, but I feel like there's more constant excitement and sort of fun with Donkey Kong 64. So I would say like, if I had to recommend it to someone playing it in 2017, I would say like, if you want to like go back and see like what N64 games were like, I would recommend Donkey Kong 64 probably over Mario 64.
Nice. Yeah, dude, like I played it, I played both games recently. I played, I 100%ed Mario a couple years ago, and I think that same year, actually, I did go back and play DK64, and I played, like, maybe 20 hours of it, which was, like, half of it, and, like, I remember, like, being like, dude, this game actually holds up in a weird way. I feel like a lot of N64 games, oh, maybe not a lot, but quite a few N64 games hold up quite well due to the choices made during their design. I think DK64 is one of those games, like, with the amount of animations in there, with, like, the openness of it and, like, the choices with, like, music. Like, the music holds up, I feel like, super well. Yeah. The sound design, I feel like, holds up super well. And I feel like it translates well as far as, like, what the game's asking you to do and the activities that are there. I feel like it translates pretty well to modern day. And so I think if people have the chance, I think it couldn't hurt checking it out if you have an easy way to check it out. Otherwise, like, cop Ukulele, because I think that's going to be, like, the 2017 version of what DK64 was. It's more Banjo-Kazooie, but Banjo-Kazooie kind of, in a way, has a lot of the formula of what DK64 is, and so, for sure. Barrett, thanks so much for joining me on this podcast, dude. Like, I really appreciate it.
Thank you. It was short notice. Thank you a lot for having me. No, like, you tweeted at me, like, a couple weeks ago, like, I need to get Barrett on my podcast to talk about Donkey Kong 64, and, like, I thought it was, like, oh, yeah, that's funny, and then, like, he tweeted at me again, and I was, like, okay, he's serious. And so I tweeted back at him. I was, like, all right, let's do it, man. Let's talk about Donkey Kong 64 for an hour long, because that's what my life has been building up
to. Dude,
with all these shows, it was all for this, to talk about Donkey Kong 64 and how amazing it is. So I thank you for reaching out, because I'll go on Irrational Passions and they'll talk shit about Donkey Kong 64. I'll go to work at IGN, I'll talk to Marty Sliva, and he's like, no, Donkey Kong 64 sucks. And, you know, it's just, I finally have someone that I can share the love.
Oh yeah,
with,
for sure, man. Like, I was listening to Zero Life, and I think it was either the first or second episode, and I think you brought it up, and I was like, I gotta tweet this, because I was like, dude, I freaking love Donkey Kong 64, and I'm like, there's somebody out there evangelizing Donkey Kong 64. That's awesome. And so I'm like, dude, I gotta get this on podcast. And I think I listened to, like, maybe the latest episode, and I was like, actually, I kind of do have to get this guy on my podcast to talk about DK64, because I think it'd be a good conversation. I believe it was. And so, once again, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people find you?
My main gig right now is I'm a gameplay editor at IGN. So if you find fun clips of like Neo is a game I recently made clips for, or like montage videos, or I also do like graphics comparison and like first 15 minutes of a game and whatnot. So if you see any videos like that, have me in mind and be like, Barrett might have worked on that video. And then you can also find me on the show that you mentioned, Zero Life, which is my new show with Sean Pitts. It's a weekly podcast that posts every Wednesday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on YouTube. We don't have a custom YouTube URL right now. We're trying to get to 100 subscribers so we can get that URL. So just look up Zero Life. It's like one of the first things that pops up. It's like a cool sort of 80s pink and blue logo. So click on that, subscribe to us. That'd be awesome so we could get that URL. We're also on iTunes, and we're also on SoundCloud and Google Play and all that good stuff. And let's see, do I do anything else? Jeez, I do so fucking much. Also on YouTube, the other show that we mentioned earlier, The B-List, is making its return in the next couple months. So you can follow me on Twitter at Banandler Chong, if you want any updates for the B-List, for Zero Life, for anything that I'm doing in this silly, awesome industry that, that we're in.
Nice. Awesome. And for sure, check out Zero Life, because I I've been following Sean since Nerds, and he's just a great podcaster. I've also thought, well, I've seen your videos and stuff, and you're also a talented dude, and I think both of you guys working together, I think is a great thing, and I've enjoyed the podcast so far. Excited to see what you bring in the future for videos and stuff. Once again, for the people listening, remember that this is the OK Beast podcast. It's a gaming and nerd culture-centric show where a couple of friends come together and talk about what's going on in our world. We are the official podcast of OKBeast.com. If you like the show, remember to subscribe to us on your streaming service of choice. Visit OKBeast.com and follow at OKBeast now on Twitter. I've been Blessing. That has been Barrett, Courtney. We'll see you next episode.